Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 86 in this series, entitled Intimacy with the Divine, Celebrating Simchas Torah in Auschwitz, Chapter 33. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 4th of Shabbat, 5760.
We're up to Perek Lamed Gimel, chapter 33. The chapters 26 through 34 of Tanya are generally speaking dedicated to the theme of how to attain joy and serenity in one's life. As usual, as is his custom, in the midst of exploring this idea thoroughly, the Alter Rebbe, the author, also explores and discusses and explains various foundational concepts connected to Yiddishkeit, particularly in chapter 32, which we concluded last week, with Alter Rebbe illuminates the mitzvah of Avos Yisrael, of loving another Yid, and how a person can really introduce true deep love into his or her life, which essentially, he said, comes through joy. Because true joy can only be experienced if one relates to his soul, to his spirituality, when he celebrates his spirituality, discussed in chapter 31. And this, celebrating your spirituality, is also the path that leads one to love. Because love is transcendence of soul over body, as discussed in chapter 32 and explained during the last weeks. In continuation of this comes chapter 33, Lamed Gimel. Oid zois tia simchas. Hanefesh ha-mitis. In addition to the above, there's another means of leading one's soul to true joy, or befrat kishereye benafshe, especially when one finds it necessary for his soul, be'itim izumanim, at specific times, that he has to illuminate it. He has to cleanse it and illuminate it with gladness of heart. So another means he's going to discuss to reach true simcha, particularly at those specific times when we find it necessary to cleanse our soul, to illuminate it with an additional type of, with a joy, with a freshness. Because generally speaking, as discussed in Tanya, there are three types of sadness. There are three types of obstacles in life that don't allow us to have real joy, openness, serenity. A is a sadness or a melancholy, a depression that's caused by certain events, by various circumstances in life. Every individual has his or her baggage and load of problems, whether in psychological issues, issues, physical issues, health, relationships, families, life, and so on and so forth. This can easily plunge a person into despair. Certain events that come our way that cause us unhappiness, sadness, and also vary drastically, these were dealt with in chapters 26 through 28. Then there's another sadness dealt with in chapter 29 that comes through Timtum Halev, through a plugged heart, not through certain negative events or circumstances, but from the fact that one's heart sometimes becomes blocked. We become unmoved, apathetic, unimpressed, unstimulated, which the Alter Rebbe identified as coming from the fact that a person's ego becomes so inflated that it creates a blockage, it creates a plugged heart, a dull numbness, a coldness, a deadness where the emotions don't respond to anything. That he dealt with in 29, 30, and 31. Then there's a type of sadness or lack of joy that doesn't come because of certain events, or doesn't even come because you're numb and cold and apathetic and detached. It comes from a person becoming tired, getting tired of life. You're not bitter or sad over something or someone. You don't have a certain pain, necessarily. You're just exhausted from life. The daily routines of day in, day out, with all of our responsibilities and burdens, just get to us. And they drain our body, our psyche, our soul. And I'm not inspired anymore. Life is not exciting. These are the itim zamanim he's talking about. When you see at specific times that you have to cleanse your soul. It has to be refreshed. You don't have to introduce your soul. You don't have to create your soul. You don't have to change your soul. You know about your soul. You're aware of it. You're conscious of it. You relate to it. But the soul needs cleansing. It needs new energy. It needs to be refreshed. A vacation. Because one of the key expectations, or rather one of the key doctrines of Chassidus, was that a Jewish life must be fun, exciting, inspired. And often we just get tired of things, exhausted. So here is the moment where a person has to introduce spiritual deodorant into his life that will refresh him, cleanse the soul and illuminate it with a new simcha. So this is the Alter Rebbe, what the Alter Rebbe suggests. Azai, in this case, yamik machshavte. Let the person meditate deeply, v'yitzayir b'sichle yubinase, and picture in his mind and understanding in yichude yizbarich ha'amiti, the subject of Hashem's true unity. This is the moment to meditate and to create a picture in your mind. In other words, visualize it in such a profound way that it becomes as real and as vivid as a beautiful piece of art that you perceive and behold with your eyes. And what should be the subject of meditation and contemplation? To integrate Yichuda Yisbarech HaAmiti. Hashem's true unity. What is Yichuda Yisbarech HaAmiti? The true meaning of Hashem's unity. It means the concept of Achdus Hashem, the unity of Hashem, as it has been illuminated in the teachings of Chassidus, which Chassidus came and explained and revealed that when we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hashem is one, it doesn't only mean that Hashem is one in the sense that there is only one God, There is only one creator. We don't believe in polytheism. We believe in monotheism. It doesn't even only mean to denote Hashem's uniqueness, his singularity in the sense that he's one and unified and unfragmented and infinite and absolute and so on and so forth. What Chassidus explains Hashem Echad means is that Hashem is not a being existing in reality. Hashem is the definition of reality. Hashem Echad means that He is the only existence. Hashem is reality, period. There is no existence outside of Hashem's reality. There is no being except of Hashem. Except Hashem. His reality is exclusive. He is the only reality that exists. Now, this idea is elaborated at length in the second section of Tanya Shara Yichud V'Emunah. That's indeed the subject of that entire section, the portal of unity and faith, which is printed right after the first section, after the first 53 chapters. After the 53 chapters of Likutei Amarim comes Shara Yichud V'Emunah. Also, previously in this section, in chapters 20 and 21, and there he discusses the sources and the explanations and so forth. And when we learned chapters 20 and 21 last year, I'm sure some of you recall, we discussed this concept at length, including the two ideas in Achdus Hashem explained in Chassidus and Alter Rebbe's Chassidus at length, known as Yichud Elah, Yichud Tata. The higher level of unity and the lower level of unity. One is a unity which is experienced through a higher level of consciousness. And the nature of Hashem's unity experienced through a lower level of consciousness. It's interesting, the Alter Rebbe's son, the Mittler Rebbe, in his introduction to Imre Bina, one of his extraordinary, profound Hasidic works, writes about his father in very dramatic words. He says, whoever knew my father, the Alter Rebbe, the author of the Tanya, and whoever is even a bit acquainted with his Torah knows that his whole desire and yearning and passion in life was one thing, to teach Jews the true nature of Hashem's unity. His whole aspiration, what he pined for in life was to inculcate, to transmit and to permeate Jewish minds and hearts with a true awareness of what taka the meaning of Hashem's unity. The Alter Rebbe once had a chassid who was traveling, and one evening, it was a cold wintry night, late at night he arrived at an inn, a Jewish inn, a kretschma as it was known. And he entered into the inn. A Jew, the Jew who rented the inn from the overlord, from the pirates, greeted him warmly and offered him a meal, dinner. And the Jew said, no, thank you, I'm exhausted. And I want to, if you could please give me my room, I would like to go to sleep right away. I'm pushing very tired. Fine, gesundheit. He showed him his room and his bed, and the chassid went in. It was already close to midnight, so soon afterwards, the innkeeper himself went to sleep. He used to wake up at dawn. He wakes up at dawn, and he sees that the light in the chassid's room was never shut off. So he goes, and he looks through the door, and he sees that the bed was never touched. And the man is standing with one leg on the bed and one leg on the floor, and his head is leaning on one of his arms, and he's in deep meditation. So he opens the door. He was a simple Yid. He opens the door. He says, I don't understand you. You told me that, you know, I can't serve you dinner because you're exhausted and you have to go to sleep. You didn't even go to sleep. What happened to you? He says, I went to sleep, but before you go to sleep, you have to read Krishma Shalom Mitah. So I started to say Krishma Shalom Mitah, and I said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Stam to say the words Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad is meaningless. So I started to contemplate about it, and I was engaged in this meditation for a while. It was actually all night. Because for the Alter Rebbe, and particularly Chabad school of thought, integrating in a person's life what it mean, what is the meaning of Hashem Echad, is the cornerstone of living a real Jewish life and sucking the marrow out of the Jewish experience, out of Torah, out of mitzvahs, and so on and so forth. Here, the Alter Rebbe guides us to engage in this meditation in order to cleanse the soul and achieve joy. He reviews the idea very briefly with a few additional points. And the Alter Rebbe says when you'll meditate deeply on this concept, it will introduce a new energy and life into your soul. So let's see what he says. What is Yichud Yisbarach HaAmiti? Eichu Memalei Kol Almin, how Hashem permeates all the worlds, Elyonim V'Tachtonim, both the upper worlds as well as the lower universes. V'afilu Memalei Kol Aretz HaLazuhu Chveide Yisbarach. And even this world is filled with His presence, this entire world is permeated and pervaded by with his presence, and further, and everything has no identity whatsoever in his presence. Kula means everything. Kame before him in his presence is kalei chashev mamish. It's as if it doesn't exist. It has no identity. V'hu levadehu. And he alone is he, which means he is one alone. V'alyonim v'tachtonim mamish. In the upper worlds and in the lower realms, mamish, literally, he is really one alone. K'moy shahaya levade k'idim sheshus yimei bereshus. Just as he was alone prior to the 6 days of creation, but then nothing existed prior to the 6 days of creation. Obviously, he was one alone because nothing else existed. So just as he was then, obviously, in the pre-existence, in the state of pre-existence was that Hashem was exclusively alone, he was exclusive, so too now, Zagda Alter Rebbe. When all the worlds have come into being, he is still alone, as will be explained. Even in the very space where this world was created, the earth, the heaven and the earth, and all their hosts, he alone filled this space. V'gam ata kein hu levadai b'li shum shinikla. And the same exact truth holds valid even now that he is one alone without any change. Even this very space where we find ourselves, the space where our entire world exists in, and our entire world operates in that space. The home that I live in, the gas station where I fill up my car with gas, the highway on which I drive, the ATM machine from which I get my cash. Okay, those examples didn't hold true in those times. But this is the space that we exist, the office I work in. This whole space, before the creation of the world, Hashem was hu levadehu, he alone filled the space, including the concept called space, because space and time were also created. So the Alter Rebbe says this exact same state holds true even now, without any change, that now, even after existence, post-existence, hu levadehu, he is alone. Now, how can you make such a statement? How can one say this? The main problem is not with saying it. The main problem is meaning it. The main problem is not even meaning it if you believe that the world is an optical illusion. If one believes the world is some type of Maya, and indeed existence is just one big optical illusion. No. So it's a fantasy, it's a dream, it's a hallucination. But the main question is, how can you make such a statement coming from the Alter Rebbe's mouth? Yiddishkeit is based on the fact that there is a world, there is life, human beings have responsibility. What we call a normal person who inhabits a world, who is responsible, who interacts with the universe. Torah and mitzvahs is based on the fact that there's a world. If there's no world, there's no reality, there's no Torah, there's no mitzvahs. The first pasuk of Torah is, Bereishis bara Elokim ha-shamayim v'ha-aretz. So the Alter Rebbe explains, Mipnei shekol ha-nivrayim. Not because Hashem didn't create anything, and not because there are no created beings, but because Mipnei shekol ha-nivrayim, p'teilim etzli b'metziyus mamash. But because of the very existence of all created beings is utterly nullified in his presence. Etzlai, in his presence, they're absolutely nullified. And he gives an analogy, Kibitol Eisyes HaDibur V'HaMachshava B'Mekayden V'Sharshan. Just as the letters of speech and thought are nullified when they find themselves within their source and origin. Hu muhus hanefesh v'atzmus. So what is their source and origin? That is the soul, substance, and essence. Shehein eser p'chinoiseh. Meaning, it's 10 faculties. Chachma bina v'daz v'chuli. Conception, comprehension, application, etc. The 7 emotional faculties, which these 10 faculties constitute, the essence and the substance of every soul, she'ein behem p'chinas oisis adayin, in which there are no letters as yet, kaidem shemislab she'ez b'levush ha-machshava, prior to their being clothed in the garment of thought. The emergence of letters, of words, begins in the realm of thought and speech. But when the letters of thought and speech find themselves within their source and the essence of the soul, of its intelligence and its emotions, it is absolutely nullified. K'mayshen is bayer bepedek chav v'chafal of barichus einsham, as has been explained at length in chapters 20 and 21. Look it up there. That's a good question. That's a good question. You're asking why in chapter 26 and in 27 and 28 and 29 you can always say the same thing. You're depressed about something. Hu levadehu. He doesn't do that. He deals with the particular issue at hand and addresses it. But to answer that, we first have to understand the nature of the meaning. What is the meaning of Hu Levadehu? And how it is to be applied? And what are its implications in life? And from this we see that Hu Levadehu is not just an unequivocal statement that you make in the midst of every situation. Hu Levadehu. Hu Levadehu is real. And in order it should be real, it has to be applied to real life. And real life deals with details and deals with stresses and with issues and with problems and so forth. As we shall soon see. What did you want to say?
Here we're dealing with a general problem. It's also that you can't really articulate yeah. the problem. So you have to challenge that with also something.
On a general, all-encompassing new perspective. In other words, in Chavav, Chav Zayin, Chav Ches, Chav Tes, you're dealing with a particular dilemma and burden and problem and issue. So you find the solution or whatever he does for that particular dilemma. Here, you're just exhausted from life. You're just exhausted of life. Not a certain pain or tragedy or crisis and so forth. So also the approach he presents is an all-encompassing approach of reacquainting yourself with the essence of existence, with what it's all about. Now, what did the Alter Rebbe just say? So, in chapters 20 and 21, we also discussed this at length. It is quite complicated and complex and nuanced. But in order to understand the sequence of this chapter, and Alter Rebbe himself reviews it briefly, let's attempt to explain for a few moments this concept. Everybody knows that one of the foundations of Yiddishkeit is that Hashem created the world Yesh Mayayin, something from nothing, and it's attributed to the divine power of speech. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, the beginning of chapter 5, Ba'asara Ma'amaris Nivra'ilam, the world was created through Hashem's 10 utterances, or the pasuk Bidvar Hashem Shemayim Nasu, through the word of Hashem, the heavens were made, of Ruach Pivkol Tzvam, through the breath of His mouth, all of its hosts. And as the pasuk discusses in Parashas Bereishis at length, how Hashem's utterances brought into being the entire world, and all of the created beings existing and populating our universe and all of the universes. The Gemara Menachos goes even further, saying that Kibikyutke Hashem Tzurei Lamim, with the letter Yud Elam Haba was created, and with the letter Hey Elam Haza was created. Tzurei Lamim, plural. It's connected parenthetically to the content of the parshas of this week, because Chassidus says that the 10 plagues with which Hashem plagued Egypt correspond to the 10 utterances. And in order that the 10 utterances should be transformed into 10 commandments, there had to be 10 plagues in the middle. So Hashem brought in the whole world into existence through His divine speech, as it's called, Mamaros, known as Yesh Meyayin, something from nothing. Therefore, the Alter Rebbe explained at length in the second section of Tanya, briefly in chapter 20, the world constantly needs to be created continuously every single moment. Drastically different than something which is brought into being yesh miyesh, something from something. A potter who develops pots doesn't have to continuously create the pot. Once he does his job, he can leave it, and it will remain as is. A blacksmith or silversmith who takes a block of silver and develops it into a candelabra or a beautiful silver cup does it, and then doesn't have to remain there and continuously make it a cup. It will remain that way, and he can go away and continue to do his own things. But in this case, we say it's yesh miyesh, it's something from something. Since it's something that came from something, so its properties existed in the first something, the later something, the last something, can be identified in the first something, even if it came about through a nuanced evolutionary process, and nevertheless, it essentially exists. So even if you need the potter, or the blacksmith, or the silversmith, or the architect, or the constructor, or the person who builds, and so forth, to create it and develop it, it essentially exists. So once he reveals a potential that existed previously and develops one something from another something, it stands on its own feet. Versus the world, since the universe is created yesh me'ayin, something from nothing, So there is nothing there that can continually retain the existence because it was created from nothing. So the Creator must constantly bring it into existence. And this, says the Alter Rebbe, logically brings us to another conclusion that there is no reality outside of the Creator. Again, this is a difficult concept to integrate. What does it mean? So we discuss then at length an interesting analogy that can be useful to explain this idea, albeit that it's by no means a complete analogy. And that is from creative human thought. For example, a daydream. In a daydream, I'm sure we're all familiar with daydreams, often at boring moments of the day or the night, when you're walking in the street or just relaxing, or you're at a very boring faculty meeting or whatever it is, one of the methods that we contrive to alleviate our boredom is to introduce into our life an exciting daydream. Now, some people are better at daydreams, some people are worse, but the common denominator is, do you remember a good daydream that you have? In a daydream, we can build an entire world in our mind. We designate a place, we populate it with as many people as we want, thousands and thousands of people. We give the people lines, statements. We can create entire realities, interactions, and so forth, wars and peace and whatever you wish in a daydream. You can imagine in the daydream that you are attending a parade with 100,000 people. You can imagine a speech that you're giving in the presence of 10,000 people. You can imagine the applause you receive afterwards, the critique, the compliments. You can imagine a conversation you're having with someone that you want, you're having with someone, and so on and so forth. That's what the nature of a daydream is. This is the analogy for the creation of the world. So you'll ask the question, how can you even introduce this metaphor as an analogy? You didn't create anything in your daydream. It's merely your thought. This is what a daydream is. It's you thinking about it. It doesn't have any existence independent of you. There's no real place. There are no real people. It's not really existing. It just exists because and when the thinker, the creator, the imaginer is actively choosing to think about it. And it's a good question, and that is precisely the whole point. It's something that was created from nothing. It was created from your own thought, from your wish that it exists in your mind. It does, therefore doesn't have any existence or reality independent of the imaginator. And the same exact concept is true concerning the creation of the entire world. Yesh mi yesh, something from something. The existence of the final something exists essentially. It existed in the first something. You revealed it, you developed it, you articulated it, and so forth. You brought out certain potentials, but it exists essentially. Yesh me'ayin, what's the definition of yesh me'ayin? The definition of its existence is that you create it. That is the definition of its existence. What is the definition of the 1,000 people existing in your daydream? What is the definition of their existence? That you are thinking about them, that you are imagining them. That is what makes their existence. So you're going to ask a question. If you stop thinking about them, they should still exist. Should they? Would you ask such a question? No, the definition of their existence was you thinking about them. So you want when you cease thinking about them, they should continue to exist. Why should they continue to exist? They existed earlier. He uses this analogy in chapter 48 concerning another issue. He uses this analogy of human creative thought concerning another issue. The same is true about the world. Yesh mi yesh, the final yesh, the definition of its existence is not that you, that the potter developed it. It exists intrinsically. Yesh mi yayin, being it's coming from nothing, the definition of its existence is that you brought it into being. Just as the place and the population in your own daydream. So as long as you're bringing it into being, it exists. And as, when you stop bringing it into being, it doesn't exist because it never existed independently of you bringing it into being. Now, will someone ask, if someone asks you a question, tell me. The 10,000 people that are populating your mind and your daydream, do they compromise your being alone? Do they compromise your aloneness? Obviously not. You were alone before the daydream and you're alone after the daydream. Either 5, 10, 20, 50, so then a million people in your daydream. It's irrelevant because they have no reality independent of you. The definition of their reality is you bringing them into existence. And the same exact truth concerning the entire world. With the obvious difference that in the daydream, it's intangible realities. And when it comes to our existence, you can actually touch the table with your hand and you can touch yourself in a physical way with other differences in the analogy. So the Agdal Terebbe, hu levadehu, just as prior to existence he was alone. The same exact condition exists also after existence. After all the worlds were brought into being, since it's something from nothing, they have no existence independent of the divine words, the divine energy, the divine utterances that are bringing them constantly into being. It's a separate inyan. We're not talking about the nature of reality.
But isn't this the nature of reality? But underneath everything, this is
possible. We'll soon get to that.
So does that mean?
It reveals it.
He's continuing the process of creation.
Yeah, that's what it says that in Isaiah. Yeah. It was once one of the. They tell a story about one of the great Hasidic masters in Poland. Had a very pious student, a follower, a chassid. It's a Jew who lived far away. He was a wagoneer. A simple Jew, but a very pious Jew, and a God-fearing, honest, real, truly honest human being. And once, he felt that he was numb, he was uninspired. So what do you do in that situation? He decided he has to go to his Rebbe to hear something inspiring. So he traveled a long way. And he came late at night to his Rebbe's home. And he wanted to go straight into the room, but he heard the Rebbe was talking with someone. So he knocked on the door. So the person standing, the one sitting in the room, says, "Who is it?" So he said, "Ich. It's me." So the Rebbe asks again, "Who is there?" He says, "Ich, I." So the Rebbe responds from the other side of the door, says, "I can't understand." In Parsha's Baitaka, this week's Parsha, in the Haggadah, we quote Hashem saying that he's going to pass Vavarti Baritz Mitzrayim. So the Haggadah, Ani V'lei Malach, Ani V'lei Sadaf, Ani V'lei Shliach, Ani V'lei Acher. Because Aniva Layacher means, not literally Aniva Layacher means, I and no one else, I myself will go and pass and kill the eldest Egyptian sons and redeem the Jewish people and so forth. Aniva Layacher means, who can define himself Ani beside, who can define himself as Ani besides Ani? Where in the world does someone come to define himself as Ani? Aniva Layacher, there's only one I. The chassid heard that, he turned around and he went home. He didn't need anything else. He heard his vart, he went on. Now, it's not just an anecdote. The Baal Shem Tov taught in Alter Rebbe, like all of the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, crystallized it. in his writings,